Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Longbox Heroes, episode 338. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
Hey now, everybody. I'm going to talk like this the whole show. We have been absorbed by NPR, so we are going to have to talk like this the whole time.
Oh, my.
No, we're not going to talk like this.
Oh, okay, I would have done it.
I just felt I was a little bit too... No, there's no way I would have been able to keep that up for the entirety of the show.
I couldn't even keep it up for 3 seconds, so I'm no good at that stuff.
Right.
Unless it's wacky impressions, then I'm no good.
I could probably do the show as like the stereotypical morning show DJ deal.
Oh,
probably like longer than I can as the dead serious NPR type person.
Is the wacky DJ the same as the color analysis in like sports?
Sorta.
Gotcha. That's more my wheelhouse.
It's the, hey, coming at ya. News and weather, traffic and weather.
Okay. We have a wiener.
Right. Hot dog. Yeah. We have a wiener.
Don't praise the machine. So how was your weekend? Any snow-related incidents?
No, we didn't actually get any snow around here. It was interesting.
Yeah, good. Good for you. I got a little bit. I got about an inch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As of the following Friday from the snowfall, on the half-mile drive to take my son to school, we counted 11 cars still completely covered in snow.
Those are the best cars.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that they're saving. They're saving for spring.
I guess.
So, would you like to hear what's on the show today, Joe?
Yes, please. I want to hear what's on the show today.
June solicits with something that's especially near and dear to my heart and yours too, I think. The passing of a legendary creator. Sad. Another cancellation by a certain creator from a con, and ticket sales for a con that I'm sure will have nobody in an uproar.
Well, right, and again, it's yet again a new way in which they are doing the sales for the tickets for this particular convention.
That's right. Also, con news, free digital books and sales. What we read last week, Batwoman number 1, Killer Be Killed number 7, and we also have a preview review book, which will be dropping today, is Exo Man of War number 1.
Right, the relaunch from the Valiant universe. They're doing a whole kind of rebranding of the line going toward, I guess, the movie universe stuff. So possibly. Everything's getting new number ones.
Also, what we're looking forward to this week, Joe and Todd have issues. This week's issue was TMNT Micro Series Raphael number 1. And at the end, we'll have spoilery-filled talk of The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and The Walking Dead.
These are all things that are going to happen on the show, and more, possibly.
And more is going to be on the show?
Is and more a person, or is it just like a generic name that I said?
I don't know. I bet you there's a famous and more. There's got to be.
That's what Bing is for. Let's see.
Oh. I know there's a Julianne Moore. Wasn't she on It's a Living?
Anne Moore is the American nurse credited with as the inventor of the Snoogly and Wego child carriers.
Oh, I have many of those.
The Snoogly.
Are you sure you're not thinking of the Snuggle? Or what's the thing with that you put your arms? It's the backwards robe.
Now, see, when I did my Bing search, and that came up first. That's what I thought it was.
A Snuggie?
A Snuggie. Or the off-brand version that they mentioned in 30 Rock called the Slanket, which is a much better name.
I wear my Snuggie and just my Snuggie and my intergalactic championship belt around my house. That's it.
You're not going on planes or in hotel elevators with that, are you?
No. You mean like the grassy plains? Yes, but not on aeroplanes.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Let's get things back on track here, Todd, before they get too far off track and this becomes another episode of After Dark.
Right, right.
So, you'd mentioned about the June solicitations. I was a little busy today, so I did not get to really dive deep into the June solicitations. But was you mentioned there was something in there that was of interest to you?
That's right. A 1,080-page omnibus of Justice League International. Like I said, I have it four different ways. I'm probably going to buy it a fifth way and maybe a sixth way, and then this omnibus.
So, four different ways currently.
Right.
Single issues, trade, right. Hardcovers, right. And the ones where you could send the single issues out to be bound?
Right. That's five, right?
That's four.
That's four.
Single issue, hardcover, trades, and the specialized binding.
Right, but I count different printings and covers over the years of the trades as different versions.
Because okay.
I have, like, there's, like, a trade original version that had, like, a cover on it that was completely different. And then they did the cover for the new trade paperbacks, which are the cover of issue number one, and then in between there was a second print of the original, which is the same cover as the number one, but with different font on it. So I have to have that.
Come on now.
What? And digitally, I need to pick it up digitally. Somewhere.
Right, digitally, I highly recommend as well. Every once in a while, and you know, we discuss it here on the show, of course. Whenever they do like some sort of Justice League related something, they always throw those in.
As they should.
Like, they'll throw, at the very least, the first six issues, and then depending on how big or small the Justice League sale is, they'll throw it in. I'm almost certain the majority of it is available digitally.
Hmm.
Now, the question I have for you, Todd, is
right.
It lists what issues are in this, right?
Yes.
So, is this correct? Is there something from that chronology that's missing?
What do you mean?
Okay. A lot of times, you have your reading order of this.
Right.
Okay. Is this what they've included? Not, like, it's not, this is the order it's going to be printed, of course, but from what they show here, are they missing something? Because,
Go ahead. I don't think so. I'd have to check it against my list. Mm-hmm. But basically what this is just reprinting is everything that they put out in hardcover and trade already.
Right. So it's the first 46 issues of the main Justice League book, the first 21 issues of Justice League Europe, the one Suicide Squad issue that ties in, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 annuals, and then it says, and more.
Right. I'm not sure what the and more is, obviously.
Now, when do the quarterlies start up in this chronology?
Let me check my phone, which I have to give you the revised list because there was a typo
The list. Yes, that I do need the revised list. So that if and when the hardcover, when the omnibus comes out, I could curse the heavens.
Okay. I'm looking over the list that I have right here at JLI reading order in my phone. So I'm guessing there's a Justice League International special number one, which I think was the Huntress special,
yes,
or
the
Mr. Miracle, because there was two of them.
Now,
and they appear.
Now they're technically on the masthead on the inside. They are not numbered. They don't have a number associated with them. They're just Justice League special. Huntress, Justice League Special, Mr. Miracle.
Okay.
Those ones you would have to go by either the publish date and or the chronology date.
Right. And then the quarterlies. I'm looking to see where the quarterlies start up. I have so much here, you know?
Right.
The quarterlies start around Justice League America 44. That's where I have it Whether or not that's where it was published, that's where I have it reading, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So that was somewhere around there, which must have been sooner than that because the quarterly that I have after that is only two issues later. So they might fall into, like, I feel that because someone's in this costume, that they didn't get it until then, so it goes here. I was really meticulous with the way the reading order goes.
Now, as strongly as you feel about this, have you looked online to see if there's other people that have, like, does yours line up with what would technically be considered the correct lineup?
You know what? I've never checked it because I always figured I was the foremost authority on Justice League International.
Now, that's the thing. You are, but mm-hmm. I'm sure there are other people that feel as though they are.
Well, they'd be wrong, but I'd have to look that up. I am actually.
I agree that they would be wrong, Todd. But mm-hmm. I'm attempting to get you into an internet war with people who run Justice League fan sites.
That would be great.
Get some heat for the podcast, brother.
Someone does have a list.
Okay.
But they don't. They disagree with the way I do it.
Now, see, there you go. Now, this is going to be your project to do after the show.
Okay. I don't like the way they do this.
Because if I'm going to be up editing the show, you have to be up doing something.
I am up doing something, thinking about you editing the show. I enjoy you enjoy editing the show.
Oh, and I do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's other stuff in the June solicitations. Like I said, I combed through them. There's the beginning of the big summer crossover for DC. There's some sort of Riddler-Joker war that's happening.
Oh, my.
Oh, my, indeed. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the DC stuff, of course. A couple new Marvel books. The new Chip Zdarsky Spider-Man book. The Defenders book is coming out. And as our good friend DJ had mentioned on Twitter yesterday, the press copy for Secret Empire says, every crossover matters in this one.
Oh my goodness.
And I ain't touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Uh-oh. I think I know what you mean.
They may have said this before.
What?
And they may have lied before when they said that you have to read everything.
That's not true.
This time they really mean it though, Todd.
That's right. This time, it's not a business. It's important to the story.
Right. They want us, the readers, to have the most immersive version of the story to be told.
It always throws me back. I'm trying to remember which one it was with either it was Infinite Crusade or after Infinity Gauntlet, there was the two miniseries afterwards. They're like, we're just going to cash in on this Infinity stuff. And one of the crossovers was a Silver Sable issue, and it was like, Infinity Crusade crossover. And it was like Silver Sable looking for help, and she goes to Doctor Doom's castle, and she knocks on the door, and like Boris the assistant's like, he's not here. He's off in the Infinity Crusade. Talk to you later. And she's like, I must go find help somewhere else. And you're like, oh, that's an official tie-in. Yep. I can see how that works. I'm glad I got this. Would have missed the key elements of some of the stories if I didn't have this.
Years later, and we probably have discussed this before, so I'm not going to mention it.
Have we told this story?
Have I told? No. I'm assuming that there is someone out there, at least one person, who is listening to the show for the very first time. Mm-hmm. So they will, maybe be hearing the story for the first time, or at the very least, maybe it's been a long time since we've told it. When Joe Kelly was doing the Deadpool book at Marvel,
right,
did a Deadpool month to hopefully give the book as much of a rub as they possibly could. And there was like a different issue that came out every week, and it was a 5-week month. And one of them was a Deadpool annual that on the cover, now bear in mind, this is like 1997, maybe 1998 when this was published. And on the cover, it had the little thing in the corner that said, Official Secret Wars 2 Crossover. And there's a flashback sequence where Deadpool bumps into the Beyonder on the street. Literally, they bump into each other, They walk by, and that's your official Secret Wars 2 crossover.
That's fantastic. And that's the way it was back then.
Right. But this was the fact that it's like, hey, we're crossing over with the Secret Wars thing from 12 years ago.
As well, come on. You got timely, timely.
And I bet you there was someone who had every single Secret Wars 2 crossover, which, if you remember, Todd, when the first Secret Wars came out, there was very little crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the second Secret Wars came out, every single book that was published in one particular month was a Secret Wars 2 event crossover.
Well, yeah. And they were all important.
Well, to varying degrees, but it actually, like, it may not have been important, but for the most part, a lot of them, the Beyonder showed up for more than a page.
It's what I'm trying to say. It's just going to be like, it just like Secret Empire.
Just like Secret Empire.
Importante, yes, as they say in other countries.
Moving on to actual important stuff. You know, it's a news story that we did a couple of weeks ago here on the show about famed creator, one of the greatest artists of the modern era, Bernie Wrightson, was no longer going to be doing public appearances due to his waning health. And then over the weekend, he actually passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been fighting brain cancer, and the aforementioned surgery forced him to retire. But I guess, you know, things had just become too much. And unfortunately, he had passed away. We did speak quite a bit about him when, you know, the retirement came through. But I would be remiss to mention that Frankenstein Unbound book that he was working on.
Right.
If your local shop has it in stock, or even just look up to buy a buy it or some of the art for it, there's a couple very famous part of the solicitation two-page spreads that were in there, and just go ahead and run those through your Bing search engine, and just think to yourself, a guy did that with a pen on paper. It was not done digitally. It was not done with any sort of enhanced effects. It was just a guy, a pen, and a piece of paper.
My advice to you is Google Bernie Wrightson Laboratory or Frankenstein Laboratory, and oh my God, I can't even imagine how long that took. I can't even fathom someone would sit there and draw all that stuff. It's one of the most amazing things I have ever seen. And the first place I ever saw it was there was a print of it on the wall at our local comic shop for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And I ended up getting the hardcover Frankenstein novel that they were the illustrations for.
Right. I might even include it in the show notes here, just because.
Mm-hmm.
Just because. Can't title it that.
Just because?
No. So anyway, that's what we have here regarding the sad passing of Bernie Wrightson. And we'd also talked about, unfortunately, kind of tongue-in-cheek a little bit last week, that Stan Lee was announced for the Salt Lake Comic-Con this past weekend. And you, Todd, had postulated that maybe these people were just announcing Stan with no intention of actually having him show up. And things of that nature. But this would be the second convention in a row that he has canceled. This time due to the flu. And, well, you know, it's he's a 94-year-old man. And he's more spry than probably Todd and I put together.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
I have no spry. I wish him well, though.
Absolutely. But, yeah, you know, he was tweeting as of just up to a couple days ago. So, I certainly hope that, you know, Stan is doing well. Lastly, speaking of conventions, one of the, I would say, biggest three conventions of the calendar year?
Yep, definitely two or three.
Uh-huh. New York Comic Con is coming up this October. And they just announced that when tickets go on sale, that they are not going to be doing full weekend passes. They are only going to be doing first come, first serve, day by day passes.
Yes. And to me, that's crazy, but they did more one-day passes last year, and they said it helped out with stuff. But I mean, for me, it's a cash grab. I totally get it, because the 3-day, 4-day passes were, let's say, $90, $120, where if you have to buy all 4 days, it's going to be like $200 and some maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what it is. But I did hear from some creators and people that I talked to who said that it does help, because people who can only get 1-day passes, they're more primed to sell, to spend money that day they're there, if that makes any sense.
Right, because if you're there for 4 days, it's like, I'll wait a little bit longer. I'll wait a little bit longer, and then Mr. T won't be at the mall anymore.
Pretty much.
And then when I asked the guy at the convention if Mr. T would be coming back, he told me he's doing Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, without the necklaces, though, because that's too heavy. Oh. But so the way I look at it is, maybe it does help. They get more money. It's a seller's market, so you're going to do what they say, and that's the way it is. My favorite thing in the world to do is, if you're bored, go to the New York Comic Con Facebook page and find any thread that has ticket sales in it, and just watch the meltdowns that happen. There's nothing better. I find it the most enjoy, like, when they announced this, I saw this on the news sites, and I was like, immediately, I have it liked on my Facebook, I'm going straight to the page, and there they are. Oh, once again, this, and it's not going to stop the scalpers, and this, and they, it's the same thing every year, and there's no really good way to do it, because you know who always gets mad? The people who don't get tickets. And you know what there will always be for cons like New York and San Diego and C2E2? People who don't get tickets. There's too many people who want to go and not enough tickets. But the BS argument that New York used, that, like, well, the Javits Center is going to be under construction, so we don't have as much room this year as we've had in past years. So we're doing 1-day tickets so more people can go. I'm like, stop. Just admit it to me, and I'll be fine with it, that you want more money. That's fine. I get it. I want more money. That, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't stand there and lie to my face.
Well, Todd, you mentioned about the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
The one part that you may have overlooked in the press release, and if you're this type of masochist, then by all means, mm-hmm. this upcoming Monday, Reed Pop is going to be having on Facebook a live Q&A to discuss any feedback about these ticket changes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see this happen in real time, and to see people attempt in real time to put out fires of alleged crazy people,
mm-hmm.
then by all means, if you're free Monday at 3:30 Eastern Standard Time, go crazy.
That's right. The only thing that another thing that I will give them credit for is they have that fan verification stuff. So it's like, anyone who was fan verified last year and you went last year and you're going, want to go this year, We're holding off a block for people who went last year. So I think that's kind of cool. But then again, people will complain, why didn't you get to go last year? So I don't know. I just
so
love
difficult
it.
Last year that I didn't even bother registering. So now I'm not in the system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no end to the fun of complaining that can be had. I'm going to screen cap some of my favorites, I think.
That and pictures of your toaster.
The little toaster that could.
There'll be more about that toaster on After Dark this week.
That's a hot tease.
Right.
Literally.
So, We're talking about conventions. There are conventions happening this weekend. The two biggies, kind of East Coast, more Southeast, if you will. There's the Collective Con in Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, it looks like it's a newer convention. I see Margot Kidder is going to be there. I see Bob Layton's going to be there, amongst others. And then there is the SC Comic Con in Greenville, South Carolina. That's more your creator-heavy one. Your Mark Wades, your Frank Cho's, your people like that are going to be there. Now, I also want to mention this to some of our listeners. As other shows, you know, mention with their Amazon click-throughs or otherwise, certain bounties of certain things that you could do to make purchasing things through the Amazon click-through link, in my opinion, a little bit more difficult. And I do want to mention this. Hang on, let me go pull this up as I'm talking. We typically will have a bounty on if you are attending one of these conventions and someone piques our interest that you get a picture with said person.
Right.
The one that has kind of always been standing is if you go to a convention and both Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka are there, you have to get the double mark photo with them. Now, the one that I saw this past weekend is that Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka got a mark photo with Barry Windham, Arn Anderson, J.J. Dillon, and Tully Blanchard. The Four Horsemen, less Ric Flair.
Well, so they got the picture with the good horsemen, is what you're saying.
Well, some people would call Tully Blanchard the JV Ric Flair, but either way, that is the next level of fandom mark photo, that not only you're getting your picture taken with the leads of the Karate Kid, but you're also getting them with the greatest heel stable in the history of professional wrestling.
Stop it. If it's not Social Outcast, it's not the greatest stable of heel wrestlers to ever exist.
I think due to certain state laws, the members of the Social Outcast are not allowed to be in the same states together.
The ankle bracelets go off?
Right, they changed county lines, so we have to take a 40-minute shortcut to the hotel, because if I go straight across the county line, that this ankle bracelet will set off. But I do want to mention, of course, frequent tweeter of stuff to the show, good contributor to the show, Jesse DeJong, Jesse A. DeJong on Twitter, went to the aforementioned Salt Lake Comic Con and got the Weird Al Yankovic mark photo.
As everyone should.
So kudos to you. Jesse, I would say, ultra mega mass power listener of the show.
That's right, and you don't get to just get that title thrust upon you.
That's right.
You have to earn it.
Some would say it's a burden. Others would say it's a horrible burden. But if you want to be a somewhat ultra-mega-mass power listener of the show, you could listen to all of the shows on the soon-to-be-named network. We have dozens of shows, Todd. Wow. And I'm not going to get in some sort of legal kerfuffle like they did in Used Cars when I say exactly a dozen shows. But, of course, we have Long Box Heroes and Long Box Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, I'm just going over your laughter, Fresher in Parlance, which are on a bit of a hiatus, as are Talking Gimmicks, for very different reasons, unless Fresher and or Parlance also have a ruptured eardrum.
Oh, boy.
Profane Argument, which is back with a vengeance. Podvocacy, which has added the YouTube element to their show, much like that of Paladins of Voltron. AIM Downsights Podcast, a gaming show new to the network. And again, of course, the juggernaut of the network, the Puzzle Warriors 3 podcast.
Two things I'd like to say really quick. One, ruptured eardrum. Hell, I had a ruptured heart and I only missed one show.
All right, fair enough.
Two. Nope.
Listen, Todd, I've listened to at the very least 337 of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. You don't need your heart to do this show.
No, you don't.
No. Nope.
And number two, that's almost a mile of podcasts.
That's right. Let me get my twin brother on the horn.
let's get the license plate to open up so I don't go to jail.
We cannot say for sure. But until Guardians of the Galaxy 2 comes out, possibly Kurt Russell's greatest performance.
No, we could do a whole podcast on Kurt Russell great moments history.
We want to get to that dozen of podcasts.
Yes. Oh, don't worry. We don't want to go overboard, though.
No. I do have a friend, Captain Ron, who'd listen to every episode.
Oh, at least we're not talking.
That'll necessitate a text tomorrow morning.
That's right. At least we're not mentioning Christian Slater every episode anymore.
That'll necessitate a second text.
That's what I'm here for.
Possibly from the same person. Anyway. link to the soon-to-be-named network, soon-to-be-named-network.com, will be in the show notes, as well as the aforementioned conventions, as well as any sort of digital sales that are going on. There's a couple sales that are still ongoing, but because Comixology moves them off the front page, they're difficult to find. But strangely, one of the sales that are still going on that they're still pushing very heavily is the Brian Wood Dark Horse book sale. The Titan TV stuff is still on sale. New sales this week is Marvel is doing a sale on their House of M tie-in stuff, and Valiant is doing a sale on all of their Exo Manowar stuff, as mentioned at the front of the show, because that stuff is, that book is being relaunched with a new number one this week. So let's get the back catalog on sale here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's anything new on the freebie side, but of course those are always there kind of as they change, add, or otherwise we will change them and remove them and move them on the list. So, unless there is something else you would like to discuss from there, let's get into what we read from this past week.
Okay.
I will let you start.
I'm going to start with the book I was looking forward to most, and that is Batwoman, number one, by Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion IV, art by Steve Epting. This is basically the story of Batman has put Batwoman in charge of hunting down the last of the Monster Men contaminated Venom, and so she's going around looking for who is selling it. And in the process of that, we get to find out that she has an assistant who's like her Alfred, who is a Pennyworth, apparently, which I'm more interested in because I don't remember this character showing up before. Or if they did, I may have missed it. And in that, we're finding out how the story of where she's going intertwines with her lost year of partying and drinking before she became Batwoman. And, you know, I love this book. I love everything about Batwoman, the character, and Steve Epting doing the art on this. I'm glad, since Velvet isn't coming out, that he's doing Batwoman. It looks absolutely gorgeous. And I'm interested in finding out who's been, you know, selling the Monster Men Venom.
Right. And again, I like this book very much. You know, obviously we're getting more about the lost year or the lost time that we haven't seen of Kate Kane being filled in here. And another thing that I liked was in that Zero issue, we're like, here's a tease of a bunch of stories that are coming up, and that's not one of them we're going to do. So it's just like, hey, all that other stuff is still on the back burner, but here's what is in the forefront of this first story arc.
Right, but when they did that too, they were kind of like 6 months in advance, like in the future. Mm-hmm. So we're in the now.
Right,
it'll be soon. So,
and as you mentioned about Steve Epting's art, of course, always beautiful, always brilliant. And I think we mentioned this when we talked about Batwoman Zero last month. So as I was saying, in regards to Steve Epting's art in this, and we're going to be cracking open some books here live on the air. You hear that tape? I put tapes on my bag and my bags and backs. I'm a heathen.
No, you have to put tape on your bags and boards. What's wrong with you?
Oh, I know retailers that would have your head if you did that, Todd.
Really?
Yes.
Do I know any of them?
No.
Okay.
Right, so I'm looking here and I'm almost certain that it is a different colorist. And I'm not saying that that is a bad thing. Because Epting's colorist on Velvet was Elizabeth Brettweiser. And his colorist here is Jeremy Cox. And the coloring obviously makes the art look a lot different, but not different in a bad way, but different in a different way, if that makes any sense. Velvet doesn't have as many reds and like colors like that that really pop the same way that Batwoman does.
Yes, I think when it comes to Velvet, they Steve Epting and the colors try to make it look very natural and realistic. Where this is, like you said, they're trying to really flourish the reds and stuff like that.
Right.
I actually have a question for you on Batwoman.
Go ahead. Shoot.
Which cover did you get? Because we didn't play the game that we always do when I'm at the shop because of the blizzard. I was literally split down the middle on the covers because they looked – it was one of those, like, you know how you're a lot of times the cover will be like, oh, I'm just getting this one. There's no problem. The two covers, J.G. Jones and Epting on these, were absolutely gorgeous.
I got the Epting cover.
So did I.
Yeah. Rule of thumb, for me at least, when it comes to variant covers like that, if the cover is by the artist inside, I will usually lean toward that.
Ah.
If it is two different artists, you know, who are not doing the interiors, then obviously there's your split there. And then conversely, if it is, let's say, an artist who is more notoriously known with the character who is doing the cover, I'll pick that one up.
And you lean towards any covers with words on them.
Right. Not words himself, but actual someone speaking in a balloon.
I don't know. I heard words speaks into balloons sometimes. Mm.
No, those are the ones that he sells in the parking lot of Wing Bowl.
Okay.
Speaking of a book brilliantly colored by the aforementioned Elizabeth Breitweiser, let's talk about Kill or Be Killed number 7.
Okay.
Written by Ed Brubaker with art by Sean Phillips. So this is more of a story of Kira, who, you know, was the female, I guess, antagonist, protagonist, person in the book for the first several issues, and this is kind of a focus on her. She kind of got involved with, you know, Dylan. She was dating Dylan's roommate. She was cheating on the roommate with Dylan. It was a very weird and strange relationship, and this story is her origin story, if you will. And there's bits of this that tie into stuff that happened in the last couple issues. And okay, I'm going to be wary here when I say this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give away huge spoilers.
Right.
But I do have to talk about the end of the book.
Okay.
So Dylan was hurt in issue 1. He was prescribed medication. Then the medication wasn't doing it, so he was picking up black market medication, along with other things that you could purchase in the black market. Then that is what kind of led him down his road to being who he is now, the person who goes out and researches all these people, and essentially kills bad people, because there is some sort of crazy devil demon thing telling him to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Where this book possibly has a supernatural element. The end of this issue, I believe, is set up to throw you off the tail of that.
I totally believe that too.
Right. It's specifically set up in a way to make you believe that there is not a supernatural element, so that when they really hammer home the supernatural element, you didn't see it coming. Which is mm-hmm. great, because I'm still guessing and I'm still loving the book. And the fact that I threw this little bit of wrinkle in here at the end, I'm just like, ooh, I can't wait to see where this plays out to next.
Right. But that is very interesting to me. The more interesting thing to me in this actual issue is the photo album part of the book, which the story is told of Kira's past, and she's having these flashbacks, and each time she talks about the past, there's this photo album of her family that she has that they show various pictures throughout the history of her life and beforehand. And that I absolutely love. The storytelling with Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker in this is touching, brutal, beautiful. And I don't know, but I have to say that a lot of these pictures that Sean Phillips drew of photos for the album are actual photos from somebody's life, because they are just too perfect. If you've ever seen like old family photos, I was blown away. I was literally intrigued and just looked over every photo for a long time, just because it was so cool to see some of them. And then some of the ways like the photos are ripped later, and it's just brilliant storytelling as far as I'm concerned. The photo album, I love it.
This is a good book. We talk about it all the time. It never stops not being good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Ed Brubaker, he can write a story.
Right. He is one of those guys, and again, I think it would be tough to try to pin down the bad Ed Brubaker story. I'm sure there's one that exists, but it's not this one.
I'll have to go break out my Prez Vertigo Vision story. That's probably the bad one.
He did do one, and again, let me look at the bookshelf. I don't have to disconnect. A Vertigo book called Dead Enders.
Mm-hmm.
That was just okay. Not bad, not good, just okay.
I know you're going to want to borrow that Vertigo Visions just to see someday.
Maybe.
There was 4 one-shots that were different creators doing random Vertigo characters in the heydays of Vertigo, and it was him doing Prez, and there was like somebody who did Dr. Occult and stuff like that, and I'm like, okay, I have to go back and reread that now, because his name is on it. That's the only reason.
That's like that one Jason Aaron Penguin story.
Right.
But that's actually really good.
Yes, it was. That was an amazing story.
Right. So, last book that we're going to be discussing here is the new number one, what did you call it at the beginning of the show? Our preview review?
Yes, our preview review is the way I say it.
All right.
You gotta really hammer home the rhyme, Joe.
Gotta hit those hit those syllables, right?
That's right.
So I'm gonna add that to the list of things. So it's Exo Manowar number 1 from Valiant, written by Matt Kint, with art by Tomas Giorello.
Right.
And you don't have to taunt me and say, nailed it.
That's actually, you killed it on that one.
So I, coming into this book, only have a cursory knowledge of who Exo Manowar is. I know he was a guy from a long time ago, maybe a caveman of some kind, who got armor from like the year 4000.
That's pretty much all I knew. I always went, it's, to me, less of a caveman. I didn't know he might have actually been a caveman. To me, it was Conan in an Iron Man outfit.
There you go.
That's always the way that was the elevator pitch to Exo Manowar.
Right. So this book begins with him not having the armor. He is living a peaceful life. He is a farmer. He has a mate. But of course, there are a lot of things that pull him back and remind him of his days on Earth, which they spell wrong in the dialogue to get us to pronounce it incorrect. You know, that these people are pronouncing it incorrectly.
Right, because they don't remember exactly how he said it, so...
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was cool.
So, he is attempting his best to avoid fighting, avoid any sort of war that the armor would bring to him. But, of course, there is a war coming that he is forcibly drafted into the war as essentially an unarmed meat shield.
Yes.
Right. And because of this, because of the situation that he's in, and a little bit of inspiration that he gets beforehand, his old programming essentially kicks in, and we're off and running to the races with our story here, as it certainly looks like he is going to be donning the armor much against his will. It seems as though he has a contentious relationship with the armor,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting. But, you know, here we are. We essentially, as Todd said, taking Conan with Iron Man armor, now thrust into the war of a world that he did not want part of. And I'm sure at the end he is going to come out as some sort of dictator or kingpin or emperor of all of this. and to see where his life takes him from there. I'm sure that's going to be the arc of this, but this I was pleasantly surprised by this book, coming into it knowing less than next to nothing.
Right. I loved this book a lot. I know, a lot, because one, I'm a big Giorello fan. When he was on Conan, he actually did Conan for Dark Horse years and years ago, where I found his artwork. And two, it was one of those things where it's like, all right, I don't know much about X-O Manowar. I don't know if I'm supposed to know why he left Earth, but I don't care. If they tell me, good. If they don't, I'm fine with it. I like the fact that, you know, all the things they did with the book, him being forced into the war, and then he goes, and I thought it was brilliant storytelling in the guy brings all his soldiers to him and says, this is how it's going to go. And as he's telling him how it goes, that's, we're seeing that it goes exactly the way he told him. And I think it's going to end up a little different. I think he's going to be a reluctant, like, guy. He's not going to be the ruler, but he just wants a peaceful life, and he keeps getting dragged into it. I don't know. This book makes me want to read it more, and I've never read any Valiant other than Quantum and Woody, and this is going to be a book that I'm going to get just until, you know, it throws me off the loop. But I really loved this issue.
I'm glad you like it, and you said that, you know, and obviously getting the guy who was doing Conan to do your Conan pastiche is a very good lateral move, I would say.
Right, because it makes me feel right at home already.
So that is what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday, more times than not around 5:30 Eastern time or so, this time I did it on West Coast time on purpose. We put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you wait for the trades. Be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, no surprises. So Todd and I attempt to do two things with this. One, we're keeping a running tally of the books that we're getting from which publishers, so at the end of the year, we have a nice little condensed thing of where all of our money is going to, and then two, we attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out the following week. We have been on a dry spell the last several weeks, neither one getting anything right. Todd still with 6 correct guesses, me with 3 correct guesses. So You started the show, my good man, so you would go first.
I'm looking over your list, and I think the book you're looking forward to most is Unworthy Thor number 5.
You would be correct.
Cool beans.
This is the book where we are allegedly going to find what was said to Odin's son all the way back in Original Sin that made him unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Todd, you are also looking forward to this book as well, most.
Yes, I am. Correct.
There we go. We get something right, but no movement either way.
So it's kind of a win-loss, but it's all good.
Right. Maybe this will start some momentum for one of us.
Hopefully me.
Hopefully not you. So we'll be discussing that, of course, on the show next week, as I'm sure a plethora of other books. Who knows, we may have another preview review next week as well.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that we have there, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, past poll posts, past Todd and Joe Have Issues. The past is there, Todd, on the internet. If you did it, it's on the internet. You cannot hide from it.
Forever.
Forever and ever, Todd. So while you're over there as well, be sure to click on a little store button. Purchase a shirt or sticker with our fancy logo on it, in color on the sticker, in black and white on the shirt. I'm sure there are ways that you can get the shirt in color, but, you know, the black and white way helps us a little bit more directly, and I think it's a better value for your hard-earned dollar. Another way to spend your hard-earned dollars is through Amazon, because they have very good deals on many, many things. We discussed things about Amazon before, but all I'll say is, anything you purchase through Amazon, we get a little bit of a kickback from, and it just makes us happy, makes us feel good about ourselves, and I get to see some of the funky stuff that people are purchasing, such as the recently released Doctor Strange on Blu-ray. Someone also purchased Mass Effect Andromeda Deluxe for the Xbox One. I understand the Mass Effect games can be polarizing to some.
I've never played Mass Effect.
There was a big thing with the ending of the last game.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm sure you have gamer friends that you could ask them about this.
Yes.
Just ask them what their favorite ending of the last Mass Effect game was. And then just pull up a chair. Because you'll be there for a while.
Maybe I'll do that when we go to the shop later today.
There you go. And someone also purchased Leprechaun Origins. Now, I would assume that someone purchased this because it was St. Patrick's Day. And they wanted to watch a Leprechaun film. And on one hand, I will say, I'm happy that you purchased this. Because not only does it help me, I'm sure it also helps the star of the film, former World Wrestling Entertainment superstar Hornswoggle, someone who I know.
Oh boy.
But also, of all the Leprechaun films, this one is probably the least good of them all.
Ugh.
Might I recommend for your viewing pleasure in the future, Todd, and anyone listening to this, Leprechaun 4, the one where he goes into space.
Mm-hmm.
And Leprechaun 5, Leprechaun in the Hood.
That sounds like a good one.
I would highly recommend the space one first.
Does Leprechaun have any of them where the guy says Garbage Day? Or is that a different movie?
I don't know. I'm not hip to the Leprechaun's catchphrases.
No, not Leprechaun, the Leprechaun, but somebody says Garbage. Oh, well, don't worry about it.
You're going on something there, but I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's actually a horror movie, a terrible horror movie where the kid comes out and there's just a guy, you know, bringing out garbage or throwing away garbage. And they just pan over and he's holding the gun and he's like, Garbage Day. And he just shoots the guy. And I thought that was Leprechaun, but I could be wrong.
It appears to be from the film Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
Okay, that's what I'm remembering then.
Yes. So the fact that you are even aware of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 confounds me.
I'm just dropping some serious knowledge that you didn't think I had today.
Nope. That appears to be... I saw the first Silent Night, Deadly Night, but that looks really bad.
What? A horror movie bad? That can't happen.
Most horror movies are fantastic. I don't want to hear it. Alright, so. There's that. Of course, the plugs. I'm on Twitter, Joe Sposto. Todd is on Twitter, Roker the Joker, as well as Todd's Art Attack. Did we have any new art attacked to us this week?
No, we didn't have any new art attacked to us.
Right. They actually come and affix it to us with a tack.
If a rivet gun can shoot rivets, why can't an attack gun shoot tacks?
Follow the network on Twitter at STBN Network and, of course, longboxheroes.com. Now, I will not be in Ohio this weekend for AIW's Gauntlet for the Gold. But if you follow me on Twitter, or if you're a wrestling fan, you know that one of the owners of AIW, Chandler Biggins, Chris Bryan, is going through a very rough patch medically. Currently, we had some good news as of the recording of this show that the surgery was a success. The doctors are very optimistic about his progress. We'll know more this upcoming Thursday. And this upcoming Friday's event will be the first event that he will have not been at in the company's some 11-plus-year history. So our well wishes to Chris as he attempts to get better and rejoin us. He's missing a lot of good podcasting out there.
Yes, hope he gets better.
So before we get into TV talk, let us get into Todd and Joe Have Issues. And this issue was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro-series, one-in-one issue, Raphael, by Peter David and Kevin Eastman. So, Todd, I'll let you, since this was your pick, I'll let you describe the intricate plot of this issue.
Oh, it's super intricate. Raphael is basically sparring with the other turtles. Someone gets a little better of him. He gets mad, tries to actually kill another turtle by clunking him in the head, I believe. I forget, was it a wrench?
He picks up a wrench, but he actually doesn't make the move for it. He's stopped before he can actually, like, he just picks up the wrench, and they're like, hey, Raph, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. So he leaves to blow off some steam, and along the way, he meets up with Casey Jones, who has taken it upon himself to put on a hockey mask and get some sports equipment and fight crime. And that's basically it. It's the classic two characters who are good guys meet each other, get the wrong impression, and fight before they become friends. That's never happened in a comic book before. But I absolutely love this issue. Casey Jones is one of my, I'm going to say, top 10 favorite characters of all time. And I don't say that, you know, jokingly. And in this, this was one of my dream books to have a page from. And I think Eastman actually had some pages and he sold them on eBay. And I was upset that I couldn't get any, but, I even had a long conversation with him at a con about Casey Jones once and how basically everything was his idea, whole cloth, for Casey Jones other than the golf bag, which was Larrard's, which I found interesting. Because Larrard wouldn't draw me a Casey Jones. He said, go find Eastman. I'll draw you a turtle. I won't draw you a Casey Jones.
Oh, boy.
Because that was his baby. It was Eastman's baby. This is a simple issue. It's not deep. It's not, like the greatest issue ever told. But to me, it sums up everything that Casey is. And from here on out, he would become one of my favorite turtle character ever. And I was always a big fan of Raphael. I always liked Raphael the most of the turtles. I just loved the whole, like, hot-headed, like, you know, frigid sometimes. Just the crazy dichotomy of Raphael. Amazing.
So I like this issue. Mm-hmm. As Todd mentioned, very simple, very straightforward. Nothing really to confuse yourself about. But the one thing that I have to point out, Todd, is the dialogue in this book.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Okay. Specifically, Todd. So I've read this issue probably three times.
Mm-hmm.
Because I needed to put together a list of all the insults used in this book.
Primarily
by Casey Jones to whether it be Raphael or criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That list of insults is, in order, dog breath, armpit, hairballs, creeps, punk, scum, freak, ziphead, which confounds me, slime ball, turkey, slime, dung ball, yo-yo, swine, shorty, creepo, vile dung, and greenie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that amused me so much, Todd, but it absolutely did.
Of all those, ziphead was the one that stuck.
Oh, ziphead became like his catchphrase?
It wasn't so much a catchphrase. I know Goongala Goongala. Did he just say Goongala 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 in this?
No, he or did was not, because that would be the... We would change the name of the show from Longbox Heroes to Goongala Goongala Goongala.
That was, I think, episode or issue 10, where he yells that to save the day. But that's one of my favorite Casey Jones-isms ever. But Ziphead he used many times after that. I wouldn't say it was his catchphrase, but it was a classic one.
That is, I hate to say this, but that's borderline racist.
Goongala, goongala, goongala? No,
well, yes, but the other one as well.
Ziphead?
Yes, careful. One more time, we have to put the explicit tag on the show.
I don't think he meant it that way, though.
he meant it in the positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. But yes, it was fun. This is actually one that we had, because I guess IDW did a recent reprint of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it in color. And it was remarked in the comment section of the post here that it was interesting to see this book reprinted in color.
Right. I'm a black and white man for all my turtle stuff myself.
Do you still have the physical issue of this?
Oh, yeah. Of the Mirage run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I have every issue except for a first print of number one, a second print of number one, and a first print of number two. Everything else I have.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, because I think number one went to 7 printings. And as I've said before on the show, I think, is every time there was a new printing, they would put a 2-page or a 4-page new story in the new printing to try and, you know, get those sales.
Right.
And I would buy them just because they were Eastman and Laird new stories. And honestly, when they reprinted a lot of, like, the Ultimate Collection and stuff like that, they never reprinted those little individual stories. And Raphael, the one shot, has a second print, and there's an original 4-page story in the back of that that's not reprinted anywhere. So I have Raphael first print and second print. So if anybody wants to buy me a first print and a second print of number one and a first print of number two, I'll gladly send you where you can mail them to me.
If only you knew a fancy gentleman who was spending his time slabbing copies of Quantum and Woody, who had disposable income that he could do this for you.
Well, now that Quantum and Woody's going to be a TV show, he's going to be a millionaire.
I'm surprised he doesn't already sell his existing house and buy a new house.
Maybe he could put the old house in the new house.
So there you go. Both. So, thanks to everyone who follows along with us for Todd and Joe Have Issues. I actually am having fun with this. I was discussing this amongst mixed company the other day. People who don't care about comic books or podcasts. But I didn't care because I'm having so much fun doing this.
Wow. Nice.
So my pick for the Todd and Joe Have Issues for next week is a little bit more contemporary of a book from the 2000s. And it's strange because I keep kind of leaning on DC for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think the DC stuff pops out at me a little bit more. Whatever the attachment to it might be. But this would be Action Comics number 775, written by Joe Kelly with art by Doug Monkey. This is the issue of Superman where the Authority pastiche shows up and kind is like, yeah, Superman, you're old, your ways aren't good, we're the new way of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bigger issue. It's kind of like a double-sized issue, but it is a one-and-done storyline.
One of the greatest Superman stories ever told.
And we'll get into that, because this is one of those books as well that, you know, we kind of remember fondly from its time, but over the last, you know, several years, as kind of tastes and sensibilities and so forth have changed, I'm starting to see more and more people kind of turn on this book.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, we'll get into that more next week.
That's what I was going to say. Look at that. Yeah. You got me. You piqued my interest.
There you go. And we'll see this. Reading it again, we'll see how well this holds up with today's current sensibilities. Mm. So we are going to get into TV talk here in just a few moments. So if you did not see The Flash, Walking Dead, or Legend of Tomorrow, we do bid you adieu. We will catch you all next week. Thanks for listening, Longbox Heroes, episode 338. And we'll give you a couple seconds here to skedaddle, and we'll get into TV talk.
Mm-hmm.
Close that. Do this. All right. So, let's start with The Flash. So, in the Flash, Barry is upset that Savitar is out and that Wally has taken Savitar's place in the Speed Force.
Mm-hmm.
Wally feels as though it should be him in the Speed Force. And with the knowledge that Barry is going to be trapped, or Wally is going to be trapped in his worst moment ever, Barry cannot let him live that. So Barry goes in to try to save Wally and is confronted by, I guess what you would call, the ghosts of Barry's past. Taken, right. Brought to life in the Speed Force.
So it's Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie's there. Captain Cold is there. Which bummed me out just a little bit. Only because as I'm watching the show, you know, and the credits are rolling, and I see special guest star, and I'm like, oh man, I got that ruined on me by myself. I got no one to blame but myself.
That's right. Special guest star, third best Flash rogue.
Wait a minute, third?
Yep.
Who's after, I know you like Heatwave incorrectly.
Right, but Heatwave isn't even number one. Eobard's number one.
Man. All right. He's becoming more of a DC CW universe villain.
But I always equated Eobard as Flash's biggest rogue ever.
I guess. But that's just,
we could do a whole thing where I argue that with you, but...
Not
today. We'll say... Right, not today.
So what did you think? And, you know, you've got your B-plots going on here with Jesse trying to take it to Savitar, trying to find ways to beat him. And again, of course, we also get Jay Garrick show up inside the Speed Force as well.
I'm going to take the B-plot really fast because I want to. It was where I found Wally really annoying, you know, so far this season, and he wasn't really in this episode till towards the end. Jesse managed to step up and take his place because I don't know. I just find it really tiring. I do like the fact that HR, you know, basically tells her that he's like, oh, when the real Flash gets back, which was insulting because she's like, on my Earth, I am the real Flash. And I'm like, yes, you are.
This ain't your Earth.
This ain't your Earth. This is a different province than your Earth. And it, you know, like every time one of the younger kids who's not as good as Barry goes, like Barry just gets his butt handed to him every time with Savitar. It's like, but I can do it. I got this. I know I'm better than that. And it's like, and HR is trying to tell her, you got to calm down. You know, you're going to get yourself killed. And nobody listens. Everybody's got this. And that's one of them that just irks me. But the saving grace is anytime you use the Golden Age Flash's helmet to save the day, it is one of the greatest stories ever told. And Barry ends up stopping, Speed Force Captain Cold with Jay's helmet, and Jay steps up and takes the beating so Wally can leave and he has to, you know, have a terrible time. I'm like, I love Jay. It's a great story for Jay, but it makes me sad that it means we won't get to see much of Jay anymore this season until they break him out and trap Savitar in there.
I like this episode building up to the end of of the season. Not a great episode, but not a terrible episode.
Right. Well, you got Jay Garrick. That's all I need.
Right, but we don't, because now he's trapped in the Speed Force.
Right. But which is going to throw things off for me is the pacing of the season. Is we have this, you know, we're supposed to have this heartbreaking episode where, you know, we see Wally living his nightmare over and over again. We trap Jay in the Speed Force for Savitar. And it's like, hey, next week, the all musical episode with the Music Meister. And I'm like, well, that's a gear change right there.
Well, listen, it's the one shot in between your story arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. And I say this because we have 7 episodes left, including the episode that's airing as this episode is being recorded. So this is your one issue break, and then you get your 6 issue or episode story arc to end out the season.
Right.
Oh, goodness. So, Moving along to the next thing that we watch, which was Legends of Tomorrow. They go to the 70s to meet up with Commander Steel, our Commander Steel's grandfather, who Rip Hunter took from the 40s to this era, and he has a job at NASA, and they are attempting to get to the moon, because that is where he hid the last piece of the Spear of Destiny.
Mm-hmm. And which I thought was possibly like the most brilliant idea, is hiding the Spear of Destiny on the moon. Was, I mean, like in the 70s was just fantastic. And we got Eobard in this episode. No plot holes whatsoever in this episode.
Oh boy. Okay.
And no plot holes and amazing moon special effects.
Which lie do you want to tackle first?
At least there was no tiny hats. So,
And again, I will say a lot of heat waves sitting around doing nothing, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
We did not get enough of heat wave in this episode, but it more than made up for it, for him just looking on confounded, I guess, when Eugene Grimby of the Wool Council decided to break into song as a distraction.
But he sang the banana song.
He did sing the banana song.
And did you get the end credits where he sings the whole song?
Yes, I did.
Okay. But don't forget, Heatwave helped out with the banana song a little bit. So we got that a little bit. But I was kind of confounded also by that was your distraction. I guess they were getting ready for the musical episode this week of Flash. Just giving you a taste.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really did like too was Eobard and Ray teaming up.
Yes,
when Eobard's
sorry to interrupt you. That was legitimately some of the best stuff in the show to date.
Mm-hmm. Where he's like, "Are you gonna hook your power up to this?" And just like, "We're gonna blow the thing." He's like, "I'm from from centuries in the future. My science class as a kid taught me all this."
Right,
and then him discussing, which I thought was brilliant, was he's like, when Eobard's like, "We're not that different." He's like, "We're totally different." And you're like, in your mind, you're like, "Yeah, they are totally different. He's never killed anybody, like you have." And he's like, "Well, what do you have to do? You have dwarf star matter in your chest, and what do you do with it? Power a city? No, you become a superhero." And I'm like, "Yeah, that is kind of a dig. It's not the biggest dig, because you get to say, well, I've saved the world over more than a few times doing this. I don't know if like powering a city would have done that, but I see what you're getting at. It's all about me." And just the whole interaction between the two of them was fantastic.
Right. And I feel as though this is going to be something that kind of gets played up as the season comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Like this relationship is definitely going to be revisited at some point.
Right. And then we get to see Ray bouncing on the moon. Which they should have the police walking on the moon. Or did they?
They did not, Todd.
They should have. Okay. They should have.
And, you know, yeah, we'll get back to that in a second. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then you have the stuff with our Commander Steel and his grandfather and the relationships of fathers and sons and all that sort of stuff that I thought was touching, you know, and it kind of added some character to Nate. And then you have the stuff with now that Rip is back and that Laura or Sarah has essentially been the leader of the crew. Now the real leader of the crew is back. Now there's some friction there.
One of my favorite things is that when he's like, she's like, "It must have been tough coming back and seeing a captain in your chair." And I love Rip's answer. He's like, "No, that wasn't the tough part. The tough part was coming back and finding that this captain is way better than I ever was." And I was like, "Ooh," I was like, "Oh,
reverse burn."
Exactly. I was like, you just took your own legs out.
Right. I like what's his face who plays the Atom? Brandon Routh. I think Super. Brandon Routh is doing a great job as an actor in this role. He seems like he is having a blast with everything that he does. However, I don't want to see him off the show. But they need to stop doing these terrible special effects with
them. Oh, the long way around to get to the special effects.
It's bad, Todd. This was bad.
What?
Now, see, this is you being contrarian just to try to get my goat.
I don't want your goat.
I dare you or anyone listening to the show to defend the scene where he's whatever he's doing on the moon.
He's bouncing on the moon.
Ugh. Because the moon, made of Swiss cheese, is like walking in a bouncy castle.
Okay, have you ever seen footage of men on the moon?
You mean the faked footage made by Stanley Kubrick on a soundstage? I've seen that documentary as well, Todd.
Okay. But no, they bounce like that. And he's in a dwarf star alloy, so he bounces different because of the weight of the alloy. Completely different bounce.
Keep trying.
It's great. I immediately, as I was watching that, I'm like, I cannot wait to talk about Ray on the Moon with Joe. I can't. I'm like, how many minutes until we record? Oh, it was fascinating. I look forward to terrible effects now. I do, because I know you go crazy. Ugh. Your silence is amazing.
I'm speechless. I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping this week's Legends of Tomorrow has a tiny hat. I really do. So we could discuss that in the next show.
I would like them to put a CGI tiny hat on him.
Oh, my goodness. What if he had a CGI Ray helmet on? Oh.
Or, like, he picks up a hat that looks small. But then when he puts it on, it's a CGI'd hat because they don't make hats. Legitimately, they do not make hats big enough to fit his giant cranium. So they just have the CGI hats on him at all time.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm mad.
Are you?
No. It just bums me out. Because as soon as like Ray got on the ship, I know he's going to be like, yeah, he's going to walk on the moon. It's going to be bad special effects. And I'm just going to grumble over it. Let me go get another beer.
Oh. Well, at least you understand the ending of the plot, though. That's all that matters. You weren't that hammered.
I got it. I'm picking up what they're putting down.
Mm-hmm.
So last but not least, let's talk about Walking Dead from this past week.
Yes.
So we are with the Hilltop folks, and this is some big crucial stuff, of course, because both Daryl and Maggie are there, and Negan and his goons are led to believe that, one, Maggie is dead, and two, Daryl is not amongst any of them. That's your A plot. Your B plot is Sasha and Rosita are going to go and storm Negan's compound. They both have differing opinions on how they're going to do so, and wacky hijinks ensue.
Mm-hmm.
I like this episode a lot, and I know we always talk about the different people on the show, and, you know, we've kind of said in the past, over the last few episodes, that if the zombie apocalypse would have happened, how we all feel as though we would be some sort of big tough guy, we would lead the whatever, we would be a prime fighter, a Daryl or a Rick type, but at the end of the day, we'd all end up being Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I would aspire, not just in a zombie apocalypse, Todd, but in my everyday life, to be Simon. Simon is quickly becoming not one of my favorite characters in Walking Dead history, just one of my favorite things in the history of the world. Such a delightful, guilty pleasure. When he is nominated for an Emmy for his performance on The Walking Dead next year, the clip they're going to use is the one where he talks about his expressive face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, where he's doing the, he's doing the Sinestro from the,
yes,
from the Challenge of the Suit, the live action years ago.
Sinestro, I think, was played by Charlie Callis in that, as you made Charlie Callis noises.
Yes.
So there was a really tense scene that was made needlessly tense by the actress who plays Enid's fantastic acting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when this is the first time that Daryl and Maggie are together, and we get a little bit of a thing with them where kind of Daryl, you know, has a moment of truth with Maggie, which I thought was really well. I did not like the what seemed to be needless bickering for the sake of bickering. So that if you, for some reason, are just watching this episode for the first time, and you watch the previously on Walking Dead, that you get a narrative story arc for Sasha and Rosita in one episode.
Mm-hmm.
The bickering between them was needless, I thought, but overall, I really liked this episode.
See, I didn't think it was needless. I think it comes down to, like, you know, one person left, one person had a guy leave them for the other person, but they are both mad that another person killed their lover, and that, you know, that's just they're not going to get along. That, so I have no problem with that. I just, what I hate is a lot of characters who do stupid things out of anger,
right?
And it's like we're storming the compound, and it's like we're two people with a book full of bullets. We're not storming anything. You know what I mean? Like, how far do you think we're going to get? And then she's like, well, we'll be outside and we'll take the shot. And it's like, no, I want to storm the place. And it's like, of those two plans, the girl who's the sharpshooter, I'm going to go with her plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems really good. But nope, Rosita's like, we're going in. And I'm like, okay, that's really weird. But I did like the way they actually made it that Sasha couldn't get a shot because everybody was in the way. She never had a clean shot, and she was like, Eugene's in the way. And then in the end, she might have been like, I would have took the shot and shot Eugene because Eugene's just terrible when they come. But I do agree with Eugene's. Like, I never asked you to come. He doesn't know they're there for Negan. He's like, I didn't ask you to come save me, so get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool.
And I did like Eugene's speech to everyone over the walkie-talkies that they picked up as well.
Mm-hmm.
As part of Negan's crew, Eugene has a little bit of a swagger to him now, as we saw in his solo adventure a couple weeks back, but to see that it's continuing and can be broken very easily was enjoyable character moments for him.
That's right. Knowing that line-cutting Eugene is still around.
Right.
That madman that he is. And I love that he has the stuffed animal in his pocket the whole time.
Yes.
That's fantastic. The only problem I really had with this episode is I love Simon, and I'm not going to badmouth Simon, but Simon has a very loud truck. And how that loud, loud truck snuck up on the hilltop so they only had 8 seconds to run for it, I don't know. It's kind of like that scene in Maximum Overdrive where the big rig sneaks up on the kid stealing the ring off the dead person's hand. And he's like, oh, there's a rig behind me. Oh, my God, where did you come from? Like, no, loud truck, two big diesel stacks on it. As it's driving away, it's attracting every zombie within 1,000 miles. And they're like, saviors are here. They're right at the gate. They apparently put it in neutral and coasted to our door.
Are you insinuating that Simon needs a new muffler, Daddy?
Yes, I am insinuating that.
Oh, my goodness. But all in all, I thought Walking Dead was the best of the three TV shows that we watched this week. We haven't done that in the past, but I just felt that it was the best. It was the most enjoyable of the three.
Other than the moonwalking, this was pretty good.
As bad as the moonwalking was, the deer, CGI deer from a couple episodes ago of Walking Dead, was also pretty terrible.
Oh, my goodness. So now we're going to keep a running track of the worst CGI on TV.
The deer is going to be tough to top.
Mm-hmm.
Deer is going to be tough to top, yeah.
So, is there anything else?
No, I think we're good, unless there's something else that you would like to go over, sir.
No, I think we're good.
All right, so for Todd, this is Joe, closing out episode 338 of Longbox Heroes. And we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!